being that we are within a few days of Purim, so we figured we'd take a break from our regularly scheduled programming and spend a little bit of time learning about Purim. And it was mentioned to me last week that since we're learning about Schar Va'onesh, we're up to the 11th Iker of the Rambam, we're learning about Schar Va'onesh, so why don't we talk about Schar Va'onesh in the story of the Megillah, or at least the punishment, the onesh of the story of the Megillah, because there's not that much reward. Now, of course, there's reward at the end, but what caused the punishment of the story of the Megillah? So that's a Gemara. That's a simple Gemara, and that's what my goal here is tonight, to learn these six lines of Gemara together, and that's it. That's it. Right. I know, I'm saying my goal is very high. I know how much we usually cover, so I'm going to set that because I know that next week nobody's going to want to talk about Purim again. Next Tuesday night. So I want to learn just these, whatever it is, six lines of Gemara. What? So just these six lines of Gemara, and we'll ask a few questions, and we'll try to understand what the Gemara means, because it is by no means a simple Gemara. And then I'll read you this Medrash that I found. It's just unbelievable. So it's the top, the Gemara on top. It's the Gemara Megillah on Daf Yud Aleph, Yud Beis Med Aleph. The Gemara says right by that arrow where that little bracket is, Shalu Talmidov es Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. The students of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai asked him the following question: Mipnei Ma Nischayvu Soneim Shal Yisrael Shabaoso Hador Kliya. Why? And whenever the Gemara refers to the Jewish people in a negative way, it refers to them as Soneim Shal Yisrael. Why is it that the Jewish people in that generation of the story of the Megillah, why is it that they were obligated to be destroyed? As we know from the story, that they are obligated to be destroyed, and there has to be a tshuva movement amongst the Jewish people in order to save them from that decree. But as we know that in the Megillah, the name of Hashem is not mentioned at all, yet the hand of Hashem is present all over the Megillah, to the degree that some write that every time it says HaMelech, the king, it's not referring to HaMelech Achashverosh, but rather it's referring to HaMelech, the king, referring to Hashem. And when it says that he gave over the ring, that he gave the ring to Haman to stamp and sign the decree that the Jewish people should be destroyed, that something like that was happening in Shemayim as well. And Hashem, as we'll see from this Medrash, Hashem was almost giving over the signet ring and allowing the Jewish people's fate to be destroyed, to be written and sealed, as we'll see in a little bit. So the question is, why is it? What did they do? What did that generation do that the Jewish people were chayev to be destroyed? Amr Lahem Imru Atem. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a very good teacher, as we know, and he says, instead of answering the question, he said, you tell me. What do you think? Right? Because whenever you teach... Well, no, whenever you teach, you want the students to come to the understanding and the realization on their own. They may not have thought about the answer first, so the Rebbe wants to give them a chance to first say, you know what, you think about it first. Well, he knew. You'll see. He has an answer. He has an answer. He wants them to think. He's training them to think. So, they said, Amru lo mipnei shenehenu misu'udaso shel oso rasha. So they say to him, it must be because they were nehenem, they benefited from the su'uda of that wicked person, referring to Achashverosh, when Achashverosh invites all of the people to come to his palace for this long party that we read about in the beginning of the Megillah. So he invited the Jewish people also, and the Jewish people went and enjoyed and benefited from the su'uda, from that meal. And for that, they were obligated to be destroyed. That's the student's answer. Omer Lahem, so he says to them, Im kein shebeshushan yehargu, shebechola olam kulo al yehargu. He says, that's a very good answer for the Jews of Shushan, because the Jews of Shushan went to this party, and they benefited from the party. But the rest of the world didn't. And we know that Haman wrote this decree not just for the Jews of Shushan, but Haman wrote the decree to destroy everybody, all of the Jews, all over the kingdom. And all over the kingdom, the Jewish people had to fight for their life, which is why we have Yud Dalid for everybody else. And the Tes Vav, the celebration of Purim on Shushan Purim, for the remembrance of the miracle in Shushan, where they fought an extra day. But everybody else shouldn't be destroyed because of the act of the Jews of Shushan. Amrulo, so they said, okay, Rebbe, that's a good question. Emorata, so now you tell us. Why is it? Now you tell us your answer. Why is it that they were that needed to be destroyed? Amr lahem mipnei hishtachavu latzelem, because they bowed down to a tzelem, an image. We'll refer to it now as an image of a god, some type of avodah zarah. Right, and that doesn't tell us what type of avodah zarah. What avodah zarah is the Gemara referring to? Or what image is the Gemara referring to? So yes. So I would have answered, had I not learned the Gemara before. Right. So in the story of Purim, who were they bowing down to?
Haman.
Right? The story of Purim, we know that they bowed down to Haman. But as we'll see, what would be wrong with saying that it was the bowing down to the image of Haman?
It doesn't say that. It says they bowed down to Haman, not...
Oh, okay. So first of all, they bowed down to Haman, not to an image. And then it could have been the same question of, well, then only the Jews of Shushan probably bowed down to Haman, right? Haman didn't travel the entire globe, unless maybe he did because he was second in command. But you could answer the same question. So the Talmidim, so it's the Tzelem of the days of Nebuchadnezzar, as we'll read about in the Medrash. In the days of Nebuchadnezzar, he put a Tzelem and had all of representatives from all different people of the world come and bow down to that tzelem, that image. And we'll talk about what that image was. So Amrulo, they asked him the following question, V'chim maso panim yesh badavar. Why did God pardon them then? According to you, that they served Avodah Zarah, right? Or so it seems, that they did something terrible, right? What? Then they should die. So then, v'chimaso panim yesh v'dover. Why did Hashem forgive them? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the easy answer?
Was it true of avodah zarah?
That's one way of answering the question. What would be another way of answering the question?
They weren't really doing it.
That's similar. That's what the Gemara is going to say. But what could have been an easier answer is: when does God forgive somebody for a sin?
Yeah.
He does tshuva.
The answer from what, like the Gemara's answer, isn't that
you're not supposed to, right? You're not supposed to bow down to an idol, even if your life is on the line, right? Right.
Why is that part of them then?
That's the question. Chimaso panim yesh v'daver, right? Is Hashem showing favoritism, right? That He's pardoning them, they should deserve to die. So the easy answer would have been, well, they did tshuva. So yeah, maybe they did something wrong, but they did tshuva for it, right? That's not the Gemara's answer, and we'll have to figure out why. So Amar Lahem, Reb Shim Bar Yochai answers, Heim lo asu elo lefanim, af HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo asu imahen elo lefanim. V'hainu dechsiv ki lo anot mi libo. They only did lefanim. Lefanim here means for an ulterior purpose, meaning they only bow down because of fear, a yira, Rashi says. Meaning, they didn't serve an idol, they did it out of fear.
Well, when you think about the answer that the Talmidim gave also, I mean, you can make the argument they weren't getting enjoyment any manner from going to the party, it's just that when the king tells you to come, you come. You know, so...
Okay, they, right. So you're saying, so they...
Well, it's... I'm just not nuts about that answer.
Which one?
The Talmidim, actually.
The Talmidim then.
Right, but also, I mean, when you talk about, I mean, forget about, like, the Jews in Shushan versus the Jews elsewhere.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you know, the answer why they were called Soneim Shel Yisrael, you know, I mean, they didn't show up
to... Well, so that's any time the Jewish people are referred to that they're, you know, why are the Jewish people going to be punished?
Okay.
The Gemara doesn't want to say that. They want to say, when will the Jewish haters... But
as far as, like, why this decree was issued against
them... Why
this
decree? Just because they
benefited. Just because they benefited from a party which,
right.
You know, if the king tells you to show up, you show up.
Oh,
you know,
good.
It's not necessarily
good.
You're getting enjoyment out of it.
Good.
It's,
so that's one big question. One big question that needs to be answered is, what are the Talmidim talking about? Right? Why is it even... Okay, fine. So, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai proved to them that they were wrong. right? Or he convinced them that they were wrong and he gave a different answer. Maybe he convinced them they were wrong. It's not so clear that they were convinced, but they said, okay, tell us what your answer is. But what were they thinking? Right? Why is it that because they went to a party and they benefited from that party, even if it was a party over Russia, why is it that they should be destroyed for that? Right? Isn't that a little bit harsh for what they did? Right? Does the punishment meet the crime? We're always trying to make the punishment meet the crime. So if there's some terrible sin, so we understand. So if they bow down to an idol, so we can understand why would they, you know, we can understand why they would have such a terrible punishment. And then the question is, how'd they get out of that terrible punishment? Right? But in the first answer, that they benefited from the meal of Ahasuerus, so why is that so terrible? So that's right. That's one question. That's one question that we have to deal with.
One question also points to that also Mordechai was there to make sure they were getting kosher food too.
Ah, so we'll have to, yeah, that's part of it. What happened at that Suda?
Weren't they using the kelim from the Beit HaMikdash?
Okay, so yes, so that could be part of the answer. That could be part of the answer, but first we have to figure out, were they eating kosher food there? Were they eating non-kosher food there?
I mean, there's a difference.
Are they chayav mitzvah? Right. Could there be... Right. So, yes.
There's a difference between going to the party because you're forced to go and going to the party, you know, because you want to be there.
Right.
So it could be that, you know, the Jews... They want to step beyond, you know, being forced to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that again, chayvita.
Okay, it could be, and right. So it could be, and right. And then the question will be: so then, why was it such a harsh punishment? So that's right. So okay, I have a list of four questions that I thought that we'd have to answer in order to understand this Gemara. Some of which are answered a little bit from the first Medrash. I don't think we'll go through all the Midrashim inside because it's the one at the end that I really want to go through inside of it because it's just adds a lot to the story of Purim. But so the four questions are as follows. Number one, what's with the Tamidim? What's the Havamina? Meaning, why would they come up with this answer? And if even without the question of, you know, well, that makes sense for the Jews of Shushan as opposed to everybody else. So what was their Havamina? Why was it so bad for them to be at the Suda? And it's the king. He's the king over 127 provinces. You're not going to say no. Number two, what was the Avodah Zarah, which we mentioned briefly, so I guess we'll just quickly answer that. It was not the Avodah Zarah of Haman, but rather it was the Avodah Zarah of Nebuchadnezzar, that the people had to come and bow down to Nebuchadnezzar, and we'll have to decide what that means.
Why are they getting punished so many years later?
So that's a good question. Why were they getting punished so many years later?
I mean, they got saved from other kings. They were left to live.
That's a good question. What that had to do with now. The next question is the question under Shim Bar Yochai of why did God show favoritism by allowing them to not destroy them? Why couldn't you just say that they did tshuva? Right? When Rabbi Shim Bar Yochai says, well, the reason why they were chayav of Misa is because... or chayav kliya, meaning to be destroyed, is because, well, they bow down to an idol. So why can't you just say? And then the Talmidim asked, if they bow down to an idol, they should have just been destroyed. So you could say, well, no, they didn't have to be destroyed. They could have done tshuva. So just quickly, that's also a quick answer to the question. Rashi writes that the question is not how is it that they were saved, because we know how they were saved. We know they did tshuva. The question is, why is it that Hashem made a miracle happen for them? Right? It's one thing for them to be saved, but it's another thing for them to then have a miracle. Right? So if it was so bad what they did, so fine, you can save them because they did tshuva, but Hashem has to make a miracle now that they should have this great success and they should destroy all the other, they should defeat all their enemies and they should become, Mordechai should become the Mishnah LeMelech. So why did Hashem have to make it in such a miraculous fashion that the story ended with this great miracle if really what they did was so terrible? And then the answer to the Gemara is that they only did so mi'ira, meaning they only did it, even the sin itself was not as bad as it looked on the outside. It wasn't done with a full heart. They didn't serve an idol. They bowed down to something.
Well,
so hold on to that. And then we have to figure out what that means, that last answer. So the fourth question that I wanted to deal with, what's that last answer? That their sin wasn't so bad, it was done lefanim. So to Hashem only treated them lefanim. Right? So there are two main questions I'd like to deal with. One, to completely understand the Talmidim's answer, right? What was so terrible about going to the Suda of Achashverosh? And number two, which is the last question, is how do you understand completely the answer of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that their sin was not as terrible as it seemed? Right? That they only did lifanim, as the Gemara ends with, and not whatever else. Right? And how that helps to get them off the hook. So, just as an aside, because it's very interesting to me, I found it very interesting. This Medrash number two, which is the Medrash in Shir HaShirim, the Medrash Rabbah in Shir HaShirim, Rabbi Akiva Eger, who was one of the great Achronim, points it out on the page. If you saw there in the Gemara where we started, there's that little yin-yang looking circle. So that's the note of Rabbi Akiva Eger in the Gemara, and he points out, look in this Medrash in Shir HaShirim. The reason why he points out to look in this Medrash in Shir HaShirim is because the opinions are flipped. The Medrash in Shir HaShirim has a discussion between Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and the rabbis, not Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and the students. And it's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai who says that the reason why the Jewish people were going to be destroyed was because they benefited from the meal of Achashverosh. And then the rabbis asked him, well, that works for the Jews of Shushan, but that doesn't work for the Jews across the world. So he answers there. He answers, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. All the Jewish people are responsible for one another. And when Reuven sins on the other side of the world, I have a certain chelek in that sin. I have a part in that sin. And therefore, even though it was only the Jews of Shushan who actually were there benefiting, all of the Jewish people were held responsible for that sin of going to the Suda of Achashverosh. That's how Rav Shimon Bar Yochai answers the question. Now, the rabbis, on the other hand, say no, it wasn't because of that, but rather it was because they bowed down to the Tzelem of Nebuchadnezzar. There it says explicitly, to the Tzelem of Nebuchadnezzar.
Again, once again, who's they?
The rabbis.
Who's
they? Good. So there, the Medrash actually explains. He says that, I'm trying to find where it is, it actually describes what they did. Yeah, down by the where I have the underlines and towards the bottom, Al Das Rabbanan Avdu Yisrael Avodas Kochavim B'Yimei Nebuchadnezzar. According to the rabbi's opinion, there was actual Avodah Zarah done in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Al Das Rav Shimon Bar Yochai Lo Avdu Yisrael Avodas Kochavim B'Yimei Nebuchadnezzar. In the opinion of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, they did not, and therefore he says that the reason why they were Chayav Misa was because of that they went to this meal and they benefited from the meal of Achashverosh, right?
Is this Kaisa as a whole, or?
Oh, so let's see. Al Das Rabbanon, now this is why the Medrash explains. Al Das Rabbanon Avdu Yisrael Avodah Zarah Ketzad. According to the rabbis, how was it that the Jewish people served Avodah Zarah in the days of Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar had Mitzelem. He put up an idol, the Hifrish Esrim Vishloshim Yikol Uma V'Uma. And he took 23 representatives of every nation of the world, the Esrim v'Shloshim Mikol Yisrael, and 23 from the Jewish people, and had them come and bow down to this tzelem, to this idol. Al Das Rav Shimon, and then, meaning both Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and the rabbis agree that three of the group that were set aside were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah refused to go and bow down to this idol, and they were thrown into the to the Kivshan, and they were saved, right? Great Kiddush Hashem, and a great miracle happened, and that's the whole discussion exactly why. They went to ask Daniel, and the Medrash describes what Daniel told them, and how they said, no, still, we can never do it, and they didn't want to go. According to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, it wasn't 23 people from every nation, it was three. And the three Jews who were chosen were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they refused to go. According to the rabbis, it was 23 people. And 20 out of the 23 went. And for whatever reason, the Jewish people were considered to be represented by those 20. It must have been the leaders. I imagine it was 20 of the Jewish leaders, which is how Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah got involved. So it was 23 leaders of the Jewish people, and they represented the Jewish people. And by the 20 of them bowing down to this Avodah Zarah, it affected the entire generation.
But wouldn't have that been written in some of the stories with, you know, like the story that we know about them,
so
wouldn't have been something mentioned at that time that,
that
there were 20, that, yeah, there were 20 other people and they didn't do it, they did do it?
I don't know. Why things are written down, why things are not, we spoke about. You know, things that are purposeful for generations and not. So it's a good question, but I'm not sure why it wouldn't have been.
Can you also
yeah.
truly make the case, you know, if a koi saw a raven zelozer when it's three people or even 23 people?
Well, so could you say that those 20 people represent all of the Jewish nation?
Yeah.
Right, meaning
three,
don't
I
they
mean,
have the
right.
same problem, right? It's a good question. Don't they get themselves into the same problem? They said to Shimon Bar Yochai, you said that the reason why the Jewish people were all going to be destroyed was because the Jews of Shushan enjoyed the meal of Achashverosh. So he said, but what about everybody else? Why should they be held responsible? So now they got themselves into the same problem, right? They would have to answer the same question. You said that 20 people bowed down to Avodah Zarah. And now you're going to punish the entire Jewish people? Why is that better than having the Jews of Shushan represent the Jewish people? The only answer I can think of off the top of my head is that if those 20 were the representatives of the Jewish people, they were the leaders,
right.
then the entire generation could be held responsible uh-huh. for the, you know, these are your representatives. As opposed to
okay.
Shushan. Shushan happened to be a town, the capital of the town, of the city of Achashverosh's kingdom, but it didn't have anything to do with the leaders of the Jewish people. Mordechai was there, and Mordechai was the one who said, don't go. Mordechai said, don't go
right.
to this party. Right. It's not going to be good for you. They didn't listen. They didn't listen. So,
imagine Mordechai was by the party?
Mordechai was there, but he told them not to go. Once they were going, then he went. To try to make sure that everything was kosher. Serve them the wine. The Gemara says, right. So now, what's interesting in this Medrash, and I think why Rabbi Akiva Eger says to see it, is because Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai says what his student said. Right? His opinion is first. In the Gemara, his opinion is that they bowed down to Avodah Zarah. Here, it's that they benefited from the meal of Achashverosh. And it's very interesting as to why. The question, obviously, is which one is his opinion and which one is not.
Could have been that it was his opinion too, and the students happened to come up with the same opinion, but then he decided that
to give another one.
Give another one.
It could be. I saw two answers brought down to explain it, and I thought of a third, but I don't know that it's right. One is that it's just a mistake, and it should flip Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai and the rabbis in the Medrash. That's the easy answer. Say, well, one must be wrong, because Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai has to be consistent. The other answer is interesting. And that is that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai here in the Medrash happened before the story in the Gemara, and the Medrash was before he went into the cave, and then the Gemara is after he came out of the cave. I'm not sure why, and you'd have to think about why, what happened in the cave, and mm-hmm. why that would change his opinion, and it would really have to do with, you know, really getting to the deeper understanding of what each of these opinions are. I thought maybe that, you know, one is where he's talking to the Rabbanon, right? And one is where he's talking to his Talmidim. I just wonder if when he's talking to the Rabbanon, bless you, is he is he a student of the Rabbanon, or are these his colleagues, right? And if he's a student of the Rabbanon, whether this first answer of that they benefited from the meal of Achashverosh is like from the perspective of a student somehow, as opposed to a perspective of the teacher. Right, I'm not sure why that would be, and I didn't see that brought down anywhere. And I have no reason to assume that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, when he's talking to the Rabbanon, he's talking to his teachers. It could be he's talking to his colleagues, but it's a thought that, you know, maybe can be developed another time next year, for Perm, or at the Perm Suda. Anyway, so that's what I wanted to show you from this Medrash, is that there's a little bit of a confusion about exactly what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said. Now, let's get back to our question. Let's focus on the Talmidim first, and then we'll get to the opinion of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The Talmidim's opinion is that the Jewish people were chayev to be destroyed because they benefited from the meal of Achashverosh. So now the question is, what was so bad about that? So there are a few different ways to go about answering this question that people do. Go about answering this question. One is by saying that they simply ate treif. that they ate non-kosher food, and it had chalev and dam. Dam, blood, and chalev, non-kosher fats, which a person is chayev karis for eating.
Karis is not
chayev. Karis, we'll have to discuss what karis means in the next few weeks. But chayev karis, and therefore it would be some type of terrible punishment. Right? Karis is certainly a powerful punishment, which is when the Rambam points out, it's the one that he picks on and says that that's the punishment. Right? Schar is in Olam Haba, and karis is the punishment. So that's one answer. And yes, you could say, so then why does that whole nation have to be destroyed? It's only karis. But that's one way of answering the question. The other way of answering the question is that they were there, that the reason why Achashverosh brought them there was to kind of break down the barriers with the hope, and what happened was that it was just the first step towards the rest of the night that the Gemara, that the Megillah does not describe to us, and that is that there were other averos, there were machshel them in other averos, like inappropriate relationships and sleeping with other women and things of that nature. They brought in Gilui Arayos and they brought them to the Suda. So by first going and enjoying the Suda, it was like breaking down the barriers, and then they were able to really make the Jewish people sin. At which point, then you can understand why they would be Chayav Misa. Right? That if you say that this Megillah only tells part of the story, and that the answer is that this is the first step towards what really was deserving of Misa, then that would be another way that some answer the question. The third way, and there are a few ways now within this third way, is to say no. The food was kosher. And even if it wasn't kosher, it wouldn't matter. Because when the king tells you to come to a meal, you go to the meal. Right? This is not like, they don't put you in jail if you don't listen to the king. They kill you. So people's lives are on the line. So if the king said, come to the meal, they went to the meal. So then, you can't blame them for being at the meal. So what was so terrible then? So there's a story that Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger brings down in the Sefer Elohim Moadai. And it's a story of the Chavetz Chaim. They asked the Chavetz Chaim in World War I, I believe. They said that some Jewish Bacharim had to go to the war, had to go into the army, and they weren't going to have kosher food there. And the question was, are you allowed to enlist in the army, or allow yourself to be drafted and taken into the army, or do you have to hide? Do you have to risk your life, basically, to not go, because you know that if you enter the army, you're going to have to eat treif. So the Chavetz Chaim answered that you can go, and you're allowed to eat treif because there's no other food. Right, pikuach nefesh, and your life is on the line. He said, but he told them, don't suck the bones. Right? You can go and eat, but don't suck the bones. What was sucking the bones?
I don't know.
What?
It's like really getting annoyed.
It's like really getting a geschmack.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's not just eating the meat. It's like
right.
Really sucking all the marrow out and every last bit of food and enjoyment that you can get from that food. So the Chavetz Chaim was telling them, you can go, and you can eat. But eat in a way that you know that you shouldn't be doing.
Eat enough to survive.
Right. Meaning don't enjoy it. Go, and you have a heter. But don't do it in a way that you're going to then, enjoy it. And if you look at the Lashon of the Gemara, it's not that they went to the meal. It's not that they ate at the meal. It's because Nehenu Me Su'uda shall also Rasha. Right? And the Gemara is careful in the way that it says it. It's the Hana. It's because they sucked the bones when they were there. They said, okay, no, we have to eat this tray of food because the king told us to eat. But wow, isn't this stuff good? Give me another portion because, I'm allowed to eat this stuff and wow, is it good. Right? They enjoyed it. They didn't just go against their will because the king said so. And they didn't just eat to make it look like they were eating. They enjoyed being there. The problem was that Nehenu Mesu Udasu Shal Osa Rasha. It was the Hana. It was that enjoyment, that geschmack that they got from the food. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's a problem.
That's Chai Misa?
So the question is, what is that? So So the what that is a disconnect. It's a disconnect between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That when they go ahead and get enjoyment out of the meal that they shouldn't really be eating at in the first place, but they have to, if they're getting a real enjoyment out of it, they're basically disconnecting themselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, this is where I'm getting my enjoyment.
We're going back to the Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh L'Zeh, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you're not in Shushan, and you're,
yeah,
you know, you're from, and you hear, okay, these people are going to the party because the king, you know, pretty much told them you have to show up.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're outside of Shushan, you know, how are you supposed to know that the other Jews who are attending the party are going to get all this hana out of it? You know, it's
right.
Maybe it's until they got there when they realized, hey, this is great. You know, I'm going to enjoy it. You know, so why should you say that all of Klal Yisrael then should be destroyed for something like that?
Right, right. That's a good question. I mean, if that's the Isser, then how could you say that others are responsible not just for the actions, but for the mindset?
Right, they may not
have
known what their intention was.
Okay, it's fair.
Good question. The open party before you invited Shushan?
What?
Say later on, you invited the rest of the world to the party?
Yeah, but I don't know if the Jews were there from that party. They may have only gone there, because that was the leaders of the whole world. I don't know if the Jews were part of that, and the Jews were there from the Jews of Shushan. There's one other answer that I think is a very good answer as well. There's David Cohn, who was a great Rav in Brooklyn, who has a number of Sfarim out. So David Cohn writes that, think about what this meal was for. Somebody mentioned this before, that what was Ahasuerus celebrating at this meal?
That's no goals.
The Gemara explains that Ahasuerus thought that he knew that there was a nevuah to the Jewish people that after 70 years in Golus, you will return to Eretz Yisrael and Hashem will rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. And Ahasuerus was off, and I can show you the timeline, but Ahasuerus miscalculated the 70 years and thought that this was the end of the 70 years. And he said, look, now the Jews are never going back. They'll be here forever. So he said, take out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Right? We read it with the Echatrup to remind us that that's referring to the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. So he took out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to sell and used the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, and he put on the garments of the Kohen Gadol, and he wore them at this meal to celebrate that the Jewish people are never going back to Eretz Yisrael. And now the Jews of Shushan come. They don't just come, but they're nehenu misudaso shalosa rasha. They come and take part and enjoy and benefit this meal where they should be crying, because in their minds and in the mind of Ahasuerus, their future is gone. Their future hopes of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash is shattered. The 70 years are up.
Unless they knew that the 70 years were not up.
Unless they knew the 70 years were not up, but still to go and celebrate this,
right,
to be a part of the meal which was made to celebrate the Jews' place being in Eretz, in Shushan forever, that they would never return to the Beis HaMikdash. As we know, Ahasuerus was a Rasha, as the Gemara says, may also Russia. He hated the Jewish people like Haman did, the Gemara says. It was like two neighbors, one with a pile of dirt and one with a hole. And he said, well, I have a hole and you have a pile of dirt. Why don't I take your pile of dirt and fill in my hole? That's what Ahasuerus and Haman were like. When Haman said, I have this idea, let's destroy the Jews, Ahasuerus said, oh, good, I have a hole, fill the dirt into the hole. So Ahasuerus was a Russia. He was celebrating the fact that the Jewish people were never going back to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And the Jewish people went and enjoyed that party. So again, you can ask the question that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai asked on the students. That explains the Jews of Shushan. What about the Jews of the rest of the world? And we have to figure out how Arvus answers that question.
Maybe.
Because it's a good question. How does Arvus... And it could be, it depends on how you understand the responsibility of one Jew for another. Can one Jew be held responsible for another's actions even if he has no chance of ever even stopping him from doing so? Right, that's a discussion. But that's a question. That's a question for Shem Bar Yochai. But to understand the havamina of the students, if we set the context of the meal in such a way that it was a celebration of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the non-return of the Jewish people, and they went and sucked the bones, then you can understand why that was so extreme. Why Hashem may have said, you're turning your back on me, that he would turn his back on the Jewish people.
And that explains also why you would want to do miracles then, once they do tshuva, because it's not only that B'nai Israel needed to be saved, but he had to reestablish his name and his presence in the world, saying that, yes, Achashverosh, you were wrong about their 70 years, the Jews are going to come back to, you know, and he had to reestablish his ideas and his purpose for the rest of the world.
Yeah, that could answer that question
maybe
also.
Maybe the people got punished, maybe everyone got, now, okay, 70 years later, I mean, now, probably like 4,000 years later, maybe they got too comfortable, and they didn't really, you know, care if the Beit HaMikdash built, because even when they went to go build the Beit HaMikdash, not everyone went back.
It could be. So that's the Musa Haskell for us.
Like we're like 5,000-6,000, you know, like we're much farther to go, also, you know, and it was very comfortable here also.
Right. So it's the Musa, we're still there to Israel.
Who says the Mashiach comes? This guy's the same about my nice fancy house, my fancy car, you know, and drop everything to go to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe that's why.
They were comfortable there.
They were comfortable. If you look, 10 years later, when the Beit HaMikdash was rebuilt, not everyone went back, but Ezra.
That's true. Yeah, could be part of the answer too. Okay, now let's move on to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's answer, and we'll have to do this a little quicker because we have a little bit of time. So the question of Shimon Bar Yochai said no. The reason why they were there's a clock up there. I brought my watch.
No, but look at the clock. You can't tell time.
That's true. That's true. That's good. That's good for us. That's good for us. Whatever. It's Purim. Purim is the king of a kibbutz, so we could have some extra learning. Anyway, I told you I'll try to be done by 10. We're not so good. So we said, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says that the reason why the Jewish people were obligated to be destroyed was because they bowed to the Tselem in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. And so the students asked them, why did Hashem forgive them at all? Or why did Hashem make a nes? They did tshuva, but why did Hashem have to make a miracle? He answers, because they only acted lefanim, so too Hashem acted lefanim. What does that mean, lefanim? So Rashi explains that the Tselem of Nebuchadnezzar was actual Avodah Zarah. Meaning he took Avodah Zarah, and he took some type of an idol, maybe of him, but to be served as an Avodah Zarah. And they only did it out of fear. Right? And therefore, it wasn't as bad. What does that mean? Right? Yareg v'yavur. What's the case of Yareg v'yavur? Somebody puts a gun to someone's head, right, and says, bow down. You can't bow down. If you did bow down, would you be bowing down out of fear?
Yeah, I would say so.
So then what's this answer that the act of bowing down wasn't so bad because it was out of fear? Right? Because the whole idea of Yareg v'yavur is out of fear. No one's bowing down if they lose the challenge and they bow down to the idol because someone has a gun to their head, even though they should have let the person kill them. They're bowing down because they're scared. So the truth is there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin of Samach Aleph and Beis. There's a Machlokes Abaye and Rava about if a person serves Avodah Zarah out of love or out of fear, whether he's Chayav Misa or not. And Rava says you're not. And we pass him like Rava. And what's interesting is, just as an aside, one of the examples he quotes is Haman. That they bow down to Haman. And they bow down to Haman out of Yira. Right? So it's just interesting that the Gemara brings that up in this context of bowing down out of Yira to Haman. Right?
Just a question. Do Averas circles Kavanah?
So that's exactly what this is. That's basically what we're saying here, is that it matters what a person is thinking when they do the Avera.
How is there ever Yareg v'yavur
if you're telling me that the Gemara says that if you bow down to an Avodah Zarah out of fear, then you're not Chayav Misa? Then when are you Chayav Misa? And when should you give up your life? So it could be that that's b'di'evet. If you didn't do it, and you did it out of fear, then you're not chayav misa.
That machlokes doesn't say that he has gone to
that. That's right. All the Gemara says is, ha'oved avodas kochavim me'ava u'me'ira.
Maybe he's just doing because everyone else is
doing it. So hold on. Here's one very important question. What does that mean? Me'ava u'me'ira of what? Out of love or out of fear of what? Or of whom?
Of society, I guess.
Of society?
He's fearing what everyone else is thinking and feeling suicidal. I don't suicidal, everyone else thinks think I'm crazy.
So you're fearing other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else could you be fearing?
Government.
Government, that's the same thing. That's other people. So the Rambam writes that you're fearing what might happen to you by this idol.
But then you're believing in that.
Rambam says, if you serve the idol, me'ava, like, she'chashak b'tzurazu mipnei melachta shahaisa na'a b'yoser, that you desire this picture because it's so nice. O she'avda mi'yiraso la, or you serve it because you fear it. Shema tariyalo, that maybe this idol will do something bad to you. K'mo shehin medamin ovadja shemetiva umeria. Then if you accept it as a god, you're chayav skila. But if you only do it not in that way, then you're not.
That's believing in it. If you're
believing in it, so it depends on whether you accept it as a god or not.
But if you accept that it's going to do something to you, then you're believing in its
power. Maybe it's
that's
not
believing
like
it.
A stone.
It's a very hard Rambam to
maybe
understand.
Serving a spirit. It's like a Mozart. It doesn't necessarily mean maybe serving the Mozart of a spirit. I don't know.
Mm.
Or a dark force.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It
could be, yeah. I don't have a full understanding of this Rambam and how to deal with it.
That's
but the Ravid gives a different answer. Mm-hmm. And he says, which is, I think, what we would have all thought originally, which was Baruch's answer, when I said, who are you fearing or loving here? It's another person. Like Haman, right? Which is what the Gemara mm-hmm. said. Like Haman. Who are they fearing when everybody bowed down to Haman?
Haman.
They didn't do it because they were thinking that the god around, if Haman was wearing an idol on his neck, that that idol had power, or if they thought that Haman had power, like as a god. But they feared Haman, they feared another person. So that's what the Ravid says.
If Rava's opinion is correct, then
yeah.
Why wouldn't Mordechai bow down?
Oh, that's a very good question. That's a very good question. That's some of the Rishonim ask. Why didn't Mordechai just bow down? Or, why didn't Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah just bow down?
Because they're leading to try and prove a point.
So it could be that they were doing it as Kiddush Hashem. Yeah. It could be as a Kiddush Hashem. They need to be more machmir on themselves. And especially, according to the second answer, which I'll just mention now, is that the Tzelem of Nebuchadnezzar wasn't even a god. It was just him. It wasn't to bow down as a god. It was to come and bow down to show that you are committed and dedicated and devoted to him as your leader. So then the obvious question is, then why not just bow down? Right? Why shouldn't they bow down? Why shouldn't Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah just bow down? Why shouldn't Mordechai just bow down to Haman? So the answer is, Tosus writes, because it looks like Avodah Zarah, and it would be a Chil Hashem for these leaders, to bow down to something that looks like Avodah Zarah.
But is it okay? Is it okay to put B'nai Yisrael into a position of jeopardy by not bowing down? The B'nai Yisrael almost lost their entire existence.
Because of who?
Because Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman.
Well, so that's what Rav Dessler, there's a whole Mahalich about this, and says that that's not the case. The Jewish people didn't almost be they weren't almost destroyed because of Mordechai. That's what it looked like. Why were they almost destroyed?
They're Jewish.
No. Because the Jewish people, the representatives of the Jewish people, bowed down to the Nebuchadnezzar's idol.
Mordechai rectified them.
Meaning it wasn't Mordechai who brought the
so what put the idea in Haman's head was Mordechai not.
But the Gezerah was made at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. So the Jewish people were obligated to be destroyed from the time of Nebuchadnezzar because people did bow down. And Mordechai was the one, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah at the time, were the ones who gave them some safety, I guess. Right? I don't know exactly how that worked, but balancing it all out. But that's what Rav Dessler writes, that no, it looked that way, and Hashem made it in a way that it looked that way so that people can turn to Mordechai, and it was a test for the Jewish people to see if they would still believe in their leader. And they said, let's see if you'll still believe in your leader. It will look like he's the one who's responsible for your destruction, when in reality, he was the one who was saving them from destruction.
He was masaking what the other leaders did?
It could be. He was masaking what they did, right. Right. So, anyway, back to this question of the Rambam. It's a very hard question to understand. And that's why a lot of the other opinions say that it was out of the fear of another person. It's not a fear of the God, but it's a fear of another person. And again, there are two ways to understand. It's a fear of another person, therefore you bow down to that person, or fear of another person, therefore you bow down to an idol. So if it's fear of another person, you bow down to an idol, then when are you ever obligated to give up your life? So the rabbis make a distinction between an idol that was never served before, like the idol of Nebuchadnezzar and Haman. They're never gods, right? Haman was never a god. This idol of Nebuchadnezzar was a new idol that he was introducing himself. But that was never a god. If you bow down to something that's never been a god before, and people don't really view it as a god, and you do so out of love or out of fear, then Rava says you're not a chayav misa. But if you bow down to something that is accepted as a god, and that's been a god, always been a god, then you would be chayav misa. Right? And that would be the distinction. When the Gemara says that a person has a gun to his head, and they say, bow down to this idol, or I'm going to shoot, and he's definitely bowing down because he's afraid of this person with the gun, so it depends what type of idol it is. If it's an idol that everybody knows is an idol, and it's Avodah Zarah, then he can't bow down. And if he does, it's Chayav Misa. But if it's an idol that nobody knows about, and that nobody really thinks is your god, like the idol of Nebuchadnezzar, or like Haman, then Rava says you can bow down. Rava says you can bow down because you're doing so without the proper intentions of serving it as an idol.
That's how it all starts. One person does that.
That's possible. That's possible. So those two answers to understand, what does it mean? What was not as terrible about their action that they did lefanim? It means they acted out of fear, and it was a real idol, but it was this new idol, and therefore they were bowing to a new idol out of fear, so it wasn't so bad, and therefore Hashem can make a miracle to save them. Or the idol itself was never an idol. It was just a statue of Nebuchadnezzar, and he never wanted anybody to serve it. He just wanted them to come and bow down to it to show respect to the king, in which case it was never as terrible as it seemed in the first place. Right? Those are the two ways. So that's how we understand the Gemara. Now, I know it's late, so let's just read parts of this Medrash on the back, because it's just such a... It's a great Medrash. It's one long Medrash. I just kept having pacing so I can get it onto one page. What? On the back, number 3. The Medrash says, right, so it tells the story a little bit. Skip that first piece. If you look in the third line of where it says Medrash Rabbah on the right side, in that second piece, it says that Amar Lahem, Mordechai got up and said, Lo telchu lechol besudaso shel Achashverosh. Don't go and eat at the suda of Achashverosh. Lo hizmin eschem ki im lelamid aleichem kategoria kdei sheyepischon peh midas hadin. Don't go, because the only reason why he's bringing you is so that you can get yourself in trouble with the midas hadin. Lekatrig aleichem lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that the midas hadin should come and tell Hashem how terrible you are. V'lo shamu l'divrei Mordechai, they didn't listen. V'halku kulam l'beis HaMishta, they all went. Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Shmona Asar Elef HaChamesh Me'os halku l'beis HaMishta, 18,500 went to the Beis HaMishta. V'achlu v'shasu v'nishtakru, they ate, they drank, they got drunk. Nizkalkulu miyad, nizkalkulu, and they made mistakes there. Miyad amad satan v'hilshin aleim l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the satan got up and told on them before Hashem. Va'amar lefan of Ribono Shel Olam, Ad Masai Tidbak Umazu Shem Mafrishim Levava Memunasam Imcha. Why are you so close? When are you going to give up on this nation who are moving themselves away from you? If you want, destroy them, because they're not doing tshuva. So Hashem says, what's going to be with the Torah? He says, don't worry about the Torah. So skip down a little bit. So then the Torah comes out in its sackcloth, crying to Hashem, what's going to be? And the Malachim come, and they cry to Hashem. The Amru Lufanav, five lines from the bottom, that first side. Ribbono Shalom, Im Yisrael, Betelim in Olam, Anu, Lama, Anu, Tzrichim Ba'olam. What do you need us Malachim for if the Jewish people are destroyed? And then the second to last line, Kevin Shishamu Chamo Levana, when the sun and the moon heard this, Kach Asfu Nagam, they also joined in, and they also cried to Hashem. Now the second column, Ba'osa Shah Rats Eliyahu Zachulatov, Eliyahu comes running, V'behala Eitzel Avos Olam, to the Avos, V'Eitzel Moshe Ben Amram, and he says to the Avos, Ad Masai Avos Ha'olam Redumim B'Shena, how long are the avos of the world going to be sleeping? And you're not going to pay attention to this great sorrow that the Jewish people are in. Everybody's crying. The sun, the moon, the stars, the mazalos, the angels. Everybody's crying. And you're still here sleeping, not doing anything. Amru lo, the Avos said, Mipnei ma. Why are they being destroyed? Amr lahem, Mipnei shenehenu yisom misudaso shel Achashverosh. And he quotes the first answer. Because they enjoyed the sud of Achashverosh. Uva'avurzos nigzer aleim gzer lachalosa min ha'olam. And because of that, it was decided and decreed that they should be destroyed from the world. Ula'abed ezichram, it's forgotten forever. Amru lo Avram Mitzchav Yaakov Imhem Avru Al Das HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'nechtem Gizei Rasam Ma Anu Yecholim La'asos. If it was decided and their judgment was sealed, what are we supposed to do?
The same Avram Avinu who argued about the Domain of Orvitz.
Chazer Eliyahu. Eliyahu goes back V'amru lo L'moshe and says to Moshe, Iroa Ne'eman, you are a faithful shepherd. Kama pa'amim amadat ala peretz l'Yisrael. How many times did you stand up for the Jewish people? And you nullified the decrees that they should not be destroyed. Skip down, next line. Moshe says, there's no great person in the generation who can help. Amar lo yesh. Shmo Mordechai. Eliyahu Hanavi says, yeah, there's one, Mordechai. Amar lo lech vehodio, go and tell him. Kdei sheyamod hu misham betfilah, he should stand there in prayer. Vani mikan, and I'll stand here. Unavakish rachamim aleihem lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we'll together, him from this world, me from the next world, ask for rachamim on the Jewish people. Amar lo roa ne'eman kvar nichtefa igeres klai al Yisrael. He says, but Yohanan, he says, but Moshe, Hashem already wrote this decree that they should be destroyed. Amar lo Moshe, in bititin chasuma, if it is sealed with clay, plaster, then tefilasenu nishmas, then we still have a chance. Our prayers can be heard. V'im bedam nechtama mashahayahu. But if it was sealed with blood, then whatever is going to happen, and we can't change it. Amar lo bititin chasuma, he says, no, don't worry, it's with clay. Amar lo Moshe Rabbeinu lech v'hodia l'Mordechai, go tell Mordechai, and immediately halach ve'odia l'Mordechai hadahu d'chsiv, that's what the pasuk in the Megillah says, u'Mordechai yadav es kol asher na'aseh v'yikra Mordechai es b'gadav, and that's the story of the Megillah. An amazing medrash.
Fascinating
medrash. There's a lot to say about it, but I'm not going to say it. And there's a big question about what does it mean that it was sealed with clay as opposed to being sealed with dam. The Maharal says that what it means is that clay is only it only forms, right? Clay, you can make a form, you can make a sculpture, you can make something. It's all on the outside. Dam is something on the inside. Dam is the pnimius, is the actual who the person is. So if it was sealed with clay, which represents the outside of a person, it means how did they sin? Was it just their outside, their form, or did they really sin with all their heart? Did it penetrate who they were? That was the question. And the answer was, they did it on the outside. It didn't change who they were. They were still connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were just sinning on the outside. So Moshe says, then there's still a chance. And then, we won't read it now, then number four on the other side is a different medrash at the end of the Megillah, medrash for Abba, again in Esther and Shir HaShirim. So there, it tells of when Hashem changed from Midas HaDin to Midas HaRachamim. That when Haman came after he prepared the tree, and he came to Mordechai, and he found Mordechai teaching Talmidim. I forgot how many it was. 22,000 students. And he tied up all the students, Haman, and he was going to kill them as well. And they started crying out, and the mothers came and said, here, eat something at least. And they said, no, we're going to fast, and we'll die in our hunger if we have to for Mordechai. And Hashem says, he heard their sound of their crying, and he says, Nizgalgalu rachamav shakash baruch hu, and immediately he was merciful, v'aman mikisei din v'yosha b'kisei rachamim, and says, Ma kol gadol hazesh anim shomea ki gidim v'kalayim. What is that noise that I hear? It sounds like the crying of sheep and goats. Amad Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe comes. Again, Moshe comes. Even though this is in like two prakim later in the Midrashim, but it's the same, you see, it's a continuation. Moshe comes and says, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'amar Ribono Shalom lo gidim v'lo tolim heim ela ketanei amcha shem shuriyim b'tanis hayom. It's the children who are going to be killed. Natagosh Baruch Hu osan igros shegazer alayim shayuchasumos v'chosam shaltit ukra'am. He took those letters, those decrees that were sealed with plaster, with clay, and he ripped them up. The Hipel Achashverosh Behala, and that's when it says in the Megillah, Balayla Ahu Nadidash Shnas Hamelech. That's the pasuk of Balayla Ahu Nadidash Shnas Hamelech. It was the Shnas Hamelech of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and he caused also the Shnas Hamelech of Achashverosh on that night. After he heard this reaction, and the Midas Hadin was awakened, Hakadosh Baruch Hu said everything will change through Moshe's prayers there, Mordechai's prayers here.
A great medrash.
Amazing medrash. An amazing story. What it all means, Hashem one day will understand. So it's an amazing medrash. So something interesting, certainly, when reading through the Megillah. Shkayach.
Shkayach.